Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Well, good morning, Dr. Swinkowski, and I want to welcome you to another episode of Ortho Joe. I've got my cup, you have yours, so let's drink away. But let me just also say to you that coming up with ideas week to week has been quite fun for me on a personal note. And this time I've gone back to the archives of our Ortho Evidence files. But before I do that, I do want to remind our listeners that you can send in questions and comments to both of us, and we will address them. We'll address every one of them at orthojoe@jbjs.org. So once again, it's orthojoe@jbjs.org.
So that can be comments about something we've said that you would like further discussion on or you disagree with, or it could be a suggestion for a topic or an interview or anything you'd like to bring up. We look forward to hearing from our listening audience.
So I went back to the archives of one of our Ortho Evidence insights on this one, Mark. This goes back to actually September of 2020. But at that time, we thought this issue was important, and it's continued to be one that's on the forefront of many university environments. And I suspect we'll have lots to talk about as it relates to the publishing environment. This is the whole issue of equity in surgery. And that particular insight was labeled being diverse and inclusive isn't enough. And let me start, if I could, with a paraphrased quote from our Vice President of Equity and Inclusion at McMaster, who writes, "The first and foremost precondition is that we get beyond thinking and talking about the concept of EDI in terms of the nice thing to do when we are feeling charitable, or in terms of compliance, the thing we are told we must do or we're facing some sort of perceived negative consequence. Instead, they argue that we should be thinking and trying to enact these EDI principles in terms of the right thing to do towards excellence to ensure creativity, innovation, competitive advantage, and relevance. And the argument I think that's being made is that behavior motivated by compliance does not generate long-lasting progress and cultural change. And I wonder just broadly to you, before we jump into some specific issues, Mark, when you think about the word getting to excellence and being diverse and inclusive as one of the key targets, how do you feel about that term? I mean, is that overcalling the reality of it, or are we not doing enough?
Oh, I don't think we're doing anywhere near enough, but I think we are headed in a positive trend in that regard. You know, living in the Minneapolis area where the tragedy of George Floyd has really ignited a worldwide discussion, it has been heavy in our thoughts, both at the university and medical school level. And it has, I think, caused a profound depth of personal reflection as to each individual, what role do we play in creating a more equitable circumstance? So I think we're on a positive trend, but there's lots of work to do.
The one thing I would say is maybe just for we're all on the same page here, let me start with a couple of basic definitions. Now, these may vary from individual to individual, but when we think about the term diversity, I always think of diversity as signaling optics. So what it is we're seeing, right? What's the mix of people we are seeing in a particular environment? And inclusivity is being, okay, how do we ensure that these individuals in many ways feel welcomed and that have a sense of belonging and equality of opportunity? The word equity, though, to me, is something different. It's kind of the idea that when everybody in a community or an environment in an office space, whatever that may be, or an institution, have access to the same opportunities despite having individual differences. So when you think of the concept of diversity, inclusion, and equity, how can we be moving forward? And maybe we speak specifically to publishing, because there's lots and lots of discussion around how do we get more inclusive in how we write papers, how we review papers, who's on editorial boards, and quite frankly, at the simplest level, how we're helping promote a diverse population towards getting access to be able to publish in, you know, in the top medical journals and top surgical journals.
Well, Mo, you know, when you proposed that we talk about this topic, you sent a copy of one of your OE Insights
articles
that you alluded to earlier. And in it, there's this advocate.
The acronym. Yes, right.
Acronym, which I think is incredibly helpful. So when we're talking about equity and opportunity in publishing or whatever, it starts with assess. That's your A word there.
Right.
So, and that's needs to be purposeful. It can't be somebody, a board of trustees telling me that we need to assess where we are. That has to be self-motivated and honest. And we have done that. And I know you and your organizations at MAC and at OE have done that as well. So we can see that there's work to do. I hate to keep going to sports analogies. You know, since we're orthopedic publications, we kind of get labeled as old jocks that I can only think of things in a sports reference. But you know, you can't win in a sport, a team sporting event without a diverse group of talents. There is no way that you can win a football game with only an offensive lineman. You know, they don't have the skill set to work. And to be successful as a scholarly organization that strives to publish the best evidence in our field, that requires a diverse group of authors and editors and reviewers. And, you know, as I have gone through the at times painful introspection that assess demands, we do have a work to do. And, you know, it really falls upon us who are in the overrepresented minority to do the work. I think we've all too often relied on people of color or women in our field, whatever, to do the work to fix things and or make it better, not fix them, but continue to improve. And I think it really comes upon the overrepresented group to do the assessment and move forward so we can create more balanced teams. And that's the way we're approaching it at the journal. A long way to go, but we are on, I believe, a correct trajectory.
You know, not to belabor your sports analogy, but the one thing that when you were speaking to this issue was I've always remembered the idea of a superstar can win a game, but teams will win championships. And actually, the more diverse a team, the more likely you are to be able to do that. And I also remember sort of this rule of sevens that had come up, which had basically said that if you take a group, sort of an average group, in this case, the reference standard was a group of men making decisions, and you add gender diversity into that. Well, when you add gender diversity, you improve the decision-making capacity by 7%. When you add now a differing geography or ethnicities into that, you add another 7% improvement in the way we can make decisions because it's just a wider perspective. And finally, when you think about age and abilities, you add yet another perspective. And so you can continually multiply your ability to make decisions because you're not as siloed as you might be in your thinking. So I do think, to your point, that the idea of the acronym of advocate gets to the point, right? You start with yourself, and then you say to yourself, what's happening around me? And how can I then create a movement within my own office space or my own institution so we can either have just make people aware of policies and get other people involved? I mean, that's ultimately the, you know, sort of the principal goal behind moving in that direction. But if I could, let me just speak to a very specific issue. A specific issue that's been, published a lot. And by no means am I saying this is the only issue we should be focusing on, but it's certainly one of the ones that have a considerable degree of interest and focus in orthopedics in particular, the orthopedic gender gap. And I went back actually to a paper that I was involved with in 2012. This was published some years ago in the, I believe, the American Journal of Orthopedics, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago. And what we had done at that time, we had looked at orthopedic research from 1970 to 2007. And we compared, just looking at gender and looking specifically at men and women in terms of their first author rates. And what we found was the following. Over that period of time, men accounted for 93.5% of first authors in orthopedics. And you can see the opposite was that women were about 6.5%. In comparing to other subspecialties like pediatrics, obstetrics and gynecology, internal medicine, and even general surgery, orthopedics was at that time in 2007 lagging behind. Numbers anywhere from 16.7% first author women in general surgery all the way up to about 40% in pediatrics. Now, subsequent to that, there's been studies done. This is by Catherine Hiller, published in July of 2020, basically saying the following, that when you look at 2006 to 2017, all the way up to 2017, we've jumped up to 17% of women being first authors. And this was looking at JBJS, which was 14%, Clinical Orthopedics and Related Research, which was 12%, and the American Journal of Sports Medicine, again, was 12%. So there has been this increase.
Right trajectory, as I said before.
Right. And more recently, in the February issue of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, I was interested to see also that there's been quite a bit of discussion around the issue of gender disparities as it relates to financial relationships between industry and orthopedic surgeons, also suggesting that, the ability to fund and promote female orthopedic surgeons or the lack of funding in that case has also had potentially some impact on, the ability to progress in the field. So there seems to be a lot of discussion on gender particularly, but I wonder if you could speak to that issue and also broadly, how do we expand that to include, all of the other important groups that we want to ensure that we have, a more diverse approach to publishing?
Right. Well, it's after the assessment, it becomes dependent upon those who are overrepresented to deal with an action. And I come from a background of interest in this topic. My predecessor here at the University of Minnesota, Roby Thompson, really was one of the early people to push bringing more women into our field, and I was fortunate enough to be chair of this department for 10 years and continued to push that. And we do to this day. We've graduated well over 100 plus women in our residency, and roughly 30% at any one given time are women. A reasonable progress, but there's still much to do. And again, it's incumbent upon the dominant overrepresented group to develop purposeful action. And you can't do that unless it's intentional. And you can't do that if it's an edict by some external power. It has to come from internal motivation. But I would argue that we've made some progress there, but we've got a bigger gap in trying to bring more people of color into our field. I was having a conversation with my colleague, Joel Boyd, who's an African-American member of our faculty, happens to be the only Black NHL physician. And Joel's a great friend, but he says he's got, the conversation went something like, well, we're up to 7% of women in our field, but when you're talking about people of color in orthopedics, we're at 1.6%. I would love to get to 6%. So I think, we need attention on both issues, but if I had to say what needs more attention at this time, I think it's dealing with the gap in individuals of color in our field and creating opportunities there, all the way from helping people who are in academics, who are people of color, to obtain higher profiles, greater opportunities, which we can help with in scholarly publishing, on up to people who are making selections for traveling fellowships, people who have the options of bringing people along to aid in their careers so that more students can see that there are medical students of color, and more medical students of color can see that there are orthopedic surgeons of color, and on and on and on. But again, it starts by those of us who are overrepresented in taking action.
And I think you're absolutely right in that case. You know, if I changed a little bit of the topic, and with the analogy that when we talk about some of the work that's happened in orthopedics, in advocacy around violence against women, in directly interacting with numerous victims, and also agencies, they said, you know, the men have to be at the forefront of this in this particular case. Now, I realize we're not talking a direct correlation, but I do think the argument is such that you have to lead, and I think people have to see all of us leading. It's very difficult for the underrepresented in research in medicine and these from underrepresented groups to say that, well, you know, we alone can make this happen because they alone don't have the power to make it happen. So on that note, though, broadly, let's say at JBJS, and I can speak to Ortho Evidence, but are there things that we can be doing directly to promote? So, you know, obviously at a small level, we can be promoting the quality work that we're seeing of authors and scientists that, you know, are representative of, you know, racialized communities and representative of female gender. We can do all of those issues. I feel, though, that is optics to some degree, and I feel that we should be even doing more. And I wonder, I know you've thought deeply about this, what more should we be doing, Mark?
Well, I think we can be purposeful. Again, assessing where we are, trying to identify individuals of color or in the female sex that could use opportunities to help build their academic profile so that they can serve as mentors to broader groups. It all starts with an evaluation and then purposefully developing programs. And we are doing things, but one of the things I really don't like is that for organizations that have power and are, as you alluded to earlier in the conversation, doing the right thing, we don't deserve special credit for this. This is not something that we should be putting on banners on the front of journals. You know, look at what we're doing. That's not the right way to go. The right way to go is to just shut up and do the right thing. And it should be behind the scenes, and it should be purposeful and with the right trajectory. And then just sit back and watch things slowly improve. That's my perspective on it. I don't like to see people saying, look what we're doing. Just do the right thing and shut up. You know, that's
yeah, I do like that. I do like that clarity of thought there, because at the end of the day, I think we have too many times where I use the term virtue signal, right? Like, you know, virtue signal is such that, you know, by me showing you what I'm doing, you should be thankful to me because I'm the one doing something. And I think it's much more about making it part of every single day and making it part of, just sort of the innate culture. So if I can end on this, I will go back to the statement, advocate. And I think that's an important one. And I'll walk through just the five quick steps here that at least things you can reflect on that it reminds me to do it every time I look at this. And I suspect that if we all take a moment each day to pause and think how we can be contributing in a positive way, it will help us. So the first is assessing your role in perpetuating systemic bias. Sounds like a lot of word jargon, but the fundamental is how do I contribute? Look, what do I think on a daily basis? How can I be looking at the way I interact with others? Define your new role, right? Define your new role in breaking down these sorts of biases. Whatever you may have, think about how others might be feeling and thinking about how you can be looking to change. Rally the voices of others, which is pretty important, right? The goal here is learn as much as you can, be open and discuss it. Don't hide behind others. start getting involved to the extent that you can. It sounds hard to do, but in fact, when you think about it, you can create a movement. A movement starts with one person, you, and I think you can move forward on that, Mark. And then be aware of what's happening in your own environment, in your office. If your office doesn't have a policy, maybe you can be the one to, you know, to start it or think about it or to read and bring it into your institution. And finally, think broadly about equity in the workplace, because nothing like individuals who work towards change, that's superb. A group that works towards change, that's superb. But the institution at its core has to develop policies that make it easy for everyone to succeed. And I think I'll end on this point, which is when everybody participates, everybody wins. And I think
we have a better team.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I would encourage all of our listeners to take a look at some of the work that's been done, to continue to reflect on this work, and remember that this is not an act, it's a process. And for all of us, you know, we're learning every single day, and we're participating actively as much as we can within our own lives. So I urge you all to do so. And I also urge you, if you have comments, questions, or any ideas for us, to send us a note at orthojoe@jbjs.org. On that note, Mark, I want to thank you again for another morning discussion and a cup of coffee.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate it, Mo. Not that I have to have the last word, but I would just say that it's most important for individuals, all of us, to look what we can do. The policies aren't going to change things. Individuals are going to change things. Policies are good, get people to think about it, but it's all about what can we as individuals do. And sorry for taking that.
Oh no, listen, that's the whole point of this, right? Is to make sure that we actually get something. So
yeah,
appreciate all the insight, and look forward to chatting again in a couple of weeks.
Great discussion, and I need to finish my coffee.
Me too. Cheers.
Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.